This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Bears postgame here at 670 The Score. I am Hub Arkus, along with James Big Cat Williams and Patrick Manley. And we are getting ready to hand it off to our post-game show. Thank you so much, guys. We've got an incredible crowd out here at Coombs Corner Sports Grill in Lockport. Olin was out here with us this morning. Anthony, of course, taking care of his duties with Fox Sports. Those guys are going to take it over for us in just a moment. We're going to have a little cross-talk here with Anthony and Olin. Before we do, though, I've got some thank yous to take care of, guys, because in addition to the guys here at Coombs Corner, and, of course, Ron Coomer have been just outstanding, our crew, guys, when we go on the road, it seems hard that we even get this done. I'm amazed sometimes that we manage to get through the airwaves on your radio. But it all starts back in the studio. Our executive producer of the Ameristar Sportsbook pregame show is Adam Studzinski. In the afternoons for Post, it's been Mike Chen in the studio today. Here on site with us all day long is Chris Dickens. I call him the chef. Chris has been at it since earlier than us this morning. Marshawn Robinson. Marshawn, what time are you here this morning? About 4 in the morning? Out here setting it all up, getting all the equipment going. Marshawn, thank you so much. Matt Doyle and Sawyer Bach, where are the guys? They're over here. Guys here with promotion, thank you so much. To all of you for listening, we do appreciate it. And I believe if we got crosstalk going now, can I bring... it's my pleasure to welcome in the hosts of your post-game show, Anthony Herron and Olin Kreutz. And Ant, let me start it off. I got to ask Olin, because we've been talking about it for the last 2 hours.
How was that food over there, Hub?
Oh, man. You know that steak the Coombs was cutting up for you?
Yeah.
You should have stuck around for it,
nah,
man.
Coombs was supposed to get me that. He kept lying about it. I'm going to bring it out, Olin. I mean, I asked for it for 2 hours. I asked for it for 2 hours. You sure Manley doesn't have a question over there?
I got a question for you first, though, because we've been talking about it. We were talking during the game. We've been talking about it in the postgame. We talked about it in the pregame. It is a mystery to me why they decided that they had a need to flip James Daniels and Cody Whitehair from center to guard. And I haven't looked at the tape yet. Got to go back and study it. But based on the performance, offense, 226 yards of total offense. Mm-hmm. The worst, well, not the worst, the 27th ranked pass rushing team in the league, 5 sacks, half mm-hmm. a dozen pressures. Why? Why did they do this? And what's your initial reaction to what the move, you know, produced?
Well, and like we talked about in the pregame show, just didn't agree with the move because that wasn't the offense's problem, right? The center wasn't the problem with the offense. And to me, it's just more evidence that they don't understand what's really wrong with their offense. Like when you watch them today against a 31st ranked Detroit Lions that give up 424 yards a game, struggle for most of that game. And today, the one thing you can say about Cody is that he is a little more, he communicates a little more. And like Big Cat knows well, a center has to be willing to open his mouth, be the leader, and get everybody organized. But didn't make much of a difference today. Kind of knew from last year that Cody would struggle a little bit with his snaps today. But if you're looking for one positive that came out of it, that would have been the one positive. But I don't know if you guys heard Mitch Trubisky's post-game interview. Hub, Cat, and Pat, I know in the post game sometimes you don't hear it, but his answer to it, and I think Big Ant's going to play it a little bit later for our listeners, his answer to it, if you ask me, now I know where the move came from. Now I know who wanted that switch. It was Mitch Trubisky, and he's way more comfortable with Cody Whitehair at center, and to be honest with you, now I'm even more bothered by the move.
And I definitely... You are correct, Olin. We are definitely going to play that during the post show. And that's the reason I found it interesting. I'm glad Olin noticed the exact same thing, because in the question that was answered, and we won't go into all the details of it, but essentially it was Mitch talking about how he didn't use the word excited, but he certainly extolled the virtues of Cody Whitehair in the middle of the offense, the communication that he specializes in, his ability to be a leader for them out there. And that's what's called upon from the center position, as Olin knows better than anyone. And so, you know, it didn't end up aiding the offense to the extent that the Bears would have needed today. They had another one of those stretches where things got hot for about a quarter, into the second quarter, through kind of the early stages of the third quarter. The thing fizzled out a bit. And the communication in there is vital, is important. And that's one of the things Olin and I will certainly get into in some more detail during the post show here after transition, is whether or not that move, you know, how does it affect James Daniels going forward? What does it end up meaning for the offense? And the fact that it does seem that whether it was Mitch pushing for it or whether or not it was just the coaching staff noticing something that they felt like needed to change. But the way Mitch phrased things during that Q&A period afterwards certainly did seem to indicate that he was, if nothing else, he was pleased about it, if not, you know, one who was pushing for the move of getting Cody Whitehair back to center.
Okay, my question, what's going on, fellas? How are you?
What's up,
Cat? What's up, man?
My question is, if we're just four ex-football players and Hub's an ex-football player, too. We'll get him in there.
I was a hell of a high school football player.
If we're sitting around and we're having a couple beers after the game and we're talking about why this move got made, and we believe that it is the quarterback's decision to change the center because it helps him feel more comfortable. As individuals, as guys in that locker room, how do we feel about that decision? You know what I mean? How do we feel about a quarterback that, in my eyes, I'm not going to speak for everybody, mm-hmm. in my eyes, needs to be pampered so much that the center needs to be changed for him to feel good?
To me, I think it'll largely depend on the results. And the results today were mixed at best. Now, you know, in addition to Mitch, where some of those sacks are Mitch holding the ball too long, some of those sacks are Mitch running himself into pressure, some of those sacks are just miscommunication up front where you got the worst pass rush, or one of the worst pass rushes in the National Football League screaming through there. But then you also have one of the things I'm going to talk to Olin about during the post is drops from receivers. We've seen Taylor Gabriel with drops here lately. We've seen Tariq Cohen as of last week's game with several drops. It's a team that leads the National Football League in drop passes. So overall, the execution up front, the communication between the center, guard, and quarterback positions there towards the interior of the protection, that's vital. But when it comes down to it, the rhythm, the timing, the execution of the offense early in game, the skill position has a lot to do with that as well when you have a squad that's leading the NFL in drops. So, you know, if Mitch was part of the influence of switching Whitehair and Daniels between the center guard position, you know, it's not something that you would think would naturally be comfortable for the guys. But if it would have led to more, especially more consistency up front, then I think everybody swallows it well enough. Yeah. If it leads to better offense today, I don't know that there was enough offense where everybody's going to say, oh, yeah, well, that's cool then because it worked.
Yeah, and one thing that we talked about in the pregame show was sometimes, like, we all do this, right? You look at the game through the eyes of the position you play. So as soon as something bad happens, I'm looking at every other position but the offensive line and saying, well, that happened there, and I'm trying to apologize for somebody getting beat on the offensive line and finding a reason for that to happen. And as an analyst, you have to step away, and really, if you have to blame the position you played on, then you have to do that. But the thing I wonder about the Bears sometimes is, if you put Mitch Trubisky in a room with their four quarterback gurus, right, who is Nagy, Childress, Heffrick, and Ragone, that's a lot of guys looking at the team through the quarterback's eyes, right? What can make things easier on the quarterback? And some of that, I think, is why most of the decisions are made around the offensive line, and the offensive line is the problem when it really isn't.
All righty, guys, that music is our cue to say goodnight. I hope that you guys enjoy the post-game show. Our post-game show became kind of a wake, to be honest with you. And in the grand tradition, as I look around Coombs Corners, Here on the mobile studio, I see the vodka, I see the scotch, I see the craft beer. Mm-hmm. Chef Dickens is working on his second case of Miller Lite. So we're handling the wake correctly, guys. We hope you have a great post-post show again. Thanks to everybody out here at Coombs Corner, for all of our listeners. And guys, stay right where you are. I can't wait to get in the car and hear what Anthony and Olin have to say. It's post-post coming up next, right here at 670 The Score.
Drive safe, guys.
Brader with the best percentage in NFL history over 50 yards is going to try a 54-yard field goal. On the right hash, angle left, flags are swirling. Here's the snap placement. Prater's boot end over end. Does it have the distance? It does. It's good from 54 yards. And Prater, with his success here at Soldier Field over the years, he missed a couple of kicks early in his career, but there he nails one for his 6-0 lead. The Lions, 7 plays and 13 yards. Second and 5, snap back. Trubisky looking to throw. Jacks the ball, looking into the end zone for Broniker. Reaches up, and he makes the catch. Touchdown! Touchdown, Bears! Beautiful throw by Trubisky, and a great catch with Will Harris, the rookie on his back. Bears have tied it up on an 18-yard strike. Trubisky to Broniker for the touchdown. First and goal, 9-yard line. Trubisky under center with Cohen in the backfield. Trubisky on the take, flips it out of the left flat with a lot of room to run at the 15, to the 10, to the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown, Cohen! Touchdown, Bears! 9 yards on the swing, and the Bears lead it 13-6. Trio to the right, snap is back. Trubisky, clean pocket, gonna zip the ball down into the end zone for Gabriel. Right side of the end zone, beats the coverage for 6. Bears extend the lead to 19-6 over the Lions. Nice whip throw by Trubisky to Gabriel. And 3 passing touchdowns on successive drives for Mitch Trubisky. Snap back, 4th and 7. Driscoll stepping up. Driscoll steps out of a tackle, running left, fires into the end zone. Pass is incomplete.
Flag down.
As time expires, but there is a flag.
Illegal forward pass.
Here we go.
Offense.
Oh, okay.
Ball game. Fade to black. Bears defense holds 20-13. They snap their 4-game losing streak. Mitch Trubisky, 3 touchdown passes, and the defense does get off the field to end the game, and the Bears get their second home win.
During the game, I definitely felt it. Now, early on, it felt similarly to other games where we were bending but not breaking on defense. We were struggling on offense. And I think if you look back and you say, okay, how do you pull out of this thing? We did that. And the offense got going, got a nice little lead, which was what we were searching for.
We have those conversations and what I think helps this offense and just what the guys are comfortable with. And I think when the call is coming fast and we have the right personnel in the huddle and we're not substituting a bunch of guys, we're able to play fast. I think that's when we're not thinking as much. We just go out there, execute the plays, and guys are in the right spot at the right time, and we're just out there making plays.
Welcome to the Bears post-game show on 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station. Here's your hosts, Anthony Herron and Olin Krutz.
That's right, big voice guy. We're here with you until 6:30 when we kick it over to Sunday Night Football. I'm Anthony Herron. He is Bears legend Olin Krutz. I'm on Twitter at Big Ann Herron. He is on Twitter at Olin_Krutz. You heard Hub Arkish, Pat Manley, and James Big Cat Williams over there at Coombs Corner, where apparently Olin went out there and had some good grub during the pregame show. They were still out there holding it down. They kicked it over to us. So we got about an hour here to keep this Bears conversation rolling after the losing streak finally, mercifully, comes to an end with the Bears that lost 4 games in a row, and they come out by the skin of their teeth, Olin, with a 20-13 win over, I'm not going to call them the hapless Detroit Lions, because it felt like there was a stretch early in the season where it's like, man, this division is deep. Detroit's playing okay. Now they just had injury after injury, and Matthew Stafford, who was playing some of the best football of his career, he goes down. It's official shortly before the game, but Jeff Driscoll comes in, and he was getting the job done, but the Bears able to survive against the team in Detroit who's now at the bottom of the NFC North. The Bears come out of the basement. I don't know if the term ugly win, if that's something you subscribe to, but that's certainly what it felt like to me, but it's a win nonetheless.
It was definitely an ugly win, right? And the one thing the Lions do have going for them is, I don't know if you agree, Big Ant, but their wide receiver core is dangerous, and they can get open, right, with Galladay, Jones Jr., Amendola and Hockenson. And these guys, they're hard to handle when you get them all out on route. So that showed up a little bit today for the Bears secondary. But to be honest, when you take a really good look at this team, Big Ant, doesn't it feel like that's the way they have to win games? They're going to win games. It's going to be what you would call ugly wins. And I hope that eventually they can accept that identity.
And it feels to me like for a few weeks now where Matt Nagy is sort of slowly evolving into this mode where week by week, we were talking about it a lot earlier in the season. And in the last few weeks, we've been having more opportunities to do our post-post show here together, where it was one thing with the expectation, we heard it all off season, for what the Bears offense could be. And we knew what the expectations were going to continue to be for what had been a great Bears defense last season. And they've had some losses in personnel there. Another crushing blow, losing Danny Trevathan to what ended up, you know, appearing to be a pretty gruesome elbow injury during the game. But Nick Kwiatkowski came in, balled out. It was fun to see that from him. I got to talk to him on Bears Post Game Live on 32 afterwards. You could see the excitement that he had, the excitement of Ben Broniker getting into the lineup at tight end, where they decided to deactivate Adam Shaheen. So there is some new blood, and you're seeing some of the depth of this roster come to fruition in certain moments. But overall, to call the game in a fashion that seems to indicate that they have to play a little more ball control on offense. They have to. We saw J.P. Holtz in there, again, having an even enhanced role in the game today. And still, the run game wasn't sterling. We were talking about it with Hub and the guys in transition a bit there. I know a lot of folks are going to be really excited to hear your thoughts on the move between Cody Whitehair, James Daniels, switching them from center and left guard, how that played out throughout the game today, how it could potentially play out both on the field and in the locker room moving forward, because it is something that can, you know, play into how guys' careers are viewed moving forward and what the development of young football players ends up turning into. So we're going to hear a lot from Olin Kreutz on that topic and a lot of others with the Bears. Want to hear from you guys as well. So the phone line, 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. Text line, of course, open as always at 670-11. And we're going to take you all the way up until 6:30. That's when Sunday Night Football between the Minnesota Vikings, they're going to be at the Dallas Cowboys. That coverage begins right here at 6:30 on 670 The Score. And then, as always, tomorrow, a Built for Tough Bears Monday. So we're going to be able to discuss that with you for the course of the next hour. But Olin, specifically, we started getting into it a little bit. We've got some audio that stood out to you and I both that we're going to play a little bit later in the post-post show here. But before we get into the audio of Mitch Trubisky at the podium after the game, being asked specifically about getting Cody Whitehair back to center, just for you, who's one of the all-time great centers in the National Football League and in watching, you've been discussing in detail the development of second-year NFL professional from Iowa, one of my fellow Hawkeyes, James Daniels, and what he was showing on the field at center so far this season. Were you surprised by the move, and how do you evaluate how it went on the field today?
I was really surprised by the move, and just to be fair, I went back and watched almost every snap that James Daniels had this year, because I didn't like the move. It really bugged me when it happened, because I don't care what you say, and he can come back, and yeah, he has to get over it, and he's a pro, and he can move back from left guard, and just to be mentally tough. We all know that. But if somebody moved me from my position when we were playing bad on a four-game losing streak, I would feel like you're saying you're the biggest problem we got.
It's my fault.
It's my, you know, you're the biggest problem we got, and we got to make a move here to make our quarterback more comfortable. Now, the Bears have had a lot of communication issues when you take a good look at the film, and one I will point out, and look, if you look for anything on film through eight games, you'll find a mistake that a guy makes in every aspect of his game. You play in the NFL, I play in the NFL. We all make mistakes while you play the game. So I was looking for communication mistakes. And you remember the play that Mitch Trubisky missed Miller against the Saints down the seam, right? Miller ran the seam is a play that was talked about a lot. And they said he had some pressure in his face, a throw he probably should have made anyway. I went back and watched the film on that. And New Orleans Saints were running a TT inside. And for those who know the TT, it's a tackle, defensive tackle game. One guy goes in, the other guy loops around him. It looked to me on the coach's copy that Cody Whitehair was signaling to James that game was coming. So I went to the TV copy and turned up the volume, and Cody yells, "Pirate, pirate," which means the D tackles, my D tackles coming inside.
Yep, you've had some defensive linemen. We use the term reduce. There's likely an inside sort of stunt that's coming where one guy who are more of an outside gap is going to usually slant towards an inside gap.
Yep. And so with all those calls, James Daniels still didn't pick up the TT. Okay. So to me, that you have to work on awareness, but you would imagine a 22-year-old center who has to improve has to work on awareness. Now, listen, if communication is a problem, and that's why you made the change, there are examples on the film of that. But what that tells me is your quarterback can't handle it then, right? Your quarterback can't take it from you. And they moved him, James, after a game in Philadelphia where you're on the road using silent count, so he can't help your communication anyway. The quarterback has to handle it. And you move him right about when you're going to face the 31st defense in the league. And probably have you think you're going to have some success versus a very bad defense. It just didn't seem a good move to me. James makes blocks in the run game that I don't see a lot of centers make in the
NFL.
He's
a really physically gifted guy.
Yes, and he reminds me a lot of Rodney Hudson for the Raiders and Nick Mangold for the Jets. An old name. I know if you're just recent to the NFL, you might not know him, but he was a very good center for a long time. A big guy, a guy who could handle big nose guards. James does struggle sometimes with athletic blocks. But like I said, when I pulled the film out, because he got moved, I'm looking for mistakes, right? If I pull anybody's film out, I can find mistakes. But didn't like the move, still don't like the move, and it didn't help the offense a lot today.
And that to me, the results of it are largely what the move will end up being judged by. If the Bears' offense ends up kind of taking off in the weeks to come here, then the move, you know, just like we're going to get into it a little bit later here in the post-post show, the decision in the second quarter with about 3 minutes to go in the second quarter, backed up on your minus 29. Minus 29 meaning the Bears haven't advanced to midfield yet. So on the 29-yard line, second quarter, a few minutes to go in the first half, fourth and one, Matt Nagy decides to go for it. That's the type of move as well that in game it works and it leads to the Bears' first touchdown of the game. A little momentum seemed to come out of the locker room as well. You put a couple more touchdowns on the board in the third quarter. But that decision, the risk-reward sort of analysis of going for fourth and one, backed up on your own 29, Matt Nagy, he addressed that with the media afterwards, felt like they needed, quote, a spark, and it did seem to spark that drive. If it doesn't go well, then it'll be scrutinized, it'll be panned, and everyone's going to say it went horribly wrong. I feel like this center discussion of flipping Cody White here and James Daniel, if it works, then we're going to look at it and say, okay, it worked, it went well, and the Bears offense took off. If it doesn't, then it will likely have a fairly negative view of what that could do to the career, you know, of a young football player in James Daniel at center.
Right. And James just needs to realize that he needs to look at his film honestly and say, okay, I got to improve here. When people are under a lot of pressure, sometimes they make bad decisions. And to me, that's a bad decision. And yes, has James Daniels been perfect this year? No. Has the O-line been good this year? No. Too many penalties, right? Too much lack of communication. Some of that, if you ask me, is scheme. But to me, it goes to the bigger problem when you watch today, Big Ant. They seem to have a problem identifying how they really move the ball and what they're really good at. If you take a good look at their offense this whole year, okay, the success they've had in the first half has been off of no huddle, right?
Yeah.
Anytime they move the ball, they've been in no huddle.
Yep.
Why don't we get to no huddle earlier? I don't know. Then we come on the second half, and we go to a big formations, and we run the ball, max protect, and throw the ball. It's constant, right? It's all the time where three and out, three and out, three and out, no points. They're averaging under a touchdown a game in the first half right now. That's not good offense, okay? So why if you're going to change the center, why not go no huddle? It's what you did against the Broncos, right? It's what you did against the Redskins. It's what Chase Daniel did after Mitch Trubisky got hurt against the Vikings. So why does it take – when did they score today in the first half? No huddle, 2 minutes.
Exactly.
Why don't we do what works is my question.
Yeah. I was saying it to Bernstein and McKnight on Thursday. My hope coming into the game today, one big thing was I was hoping we were going to see a fairly like aggressive, assertive sort of approach from Mitch Trubisky in his way he attacked the game and throwing the ball. But still, Matt Nagy calling it in a balanced manner. But in addition to that, I was hoping from a game plan standpoint, we would see balance for the majority. But because they've had so much success going tempo, going, you know, with some no huddle, when they've done it, it's been really effective. A lot of times it just comes up late in games. And then you see where Trubisky seems more comfortable in that mode. The offense as a whole seems pretty comfortable in that mode. I was hoping like the first two series, see a lot of J.P. Holtz, bash him in the nose. Then maybe series number three, come out there, show him some tempo, show him a nice change up throughout the game plan. So I couldn't agree more with that, just as what the Bears approach and where their success has seemingly been up to this point in the season. The bottom of the hour has been brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Northwestern Basketball at new Welsh Shrine Arena this season. Home opponents include Michigan State, Michigan, and Purdue. Season and single game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at NUSports.com. You've got Anthony Herron and Nolan Krutz. This is the Bears Post Bowl Show on 670 The Score. Phone line is 312-644-6767. We got a couple of callers on the line, of course, with folks excited to talk about the Bears win that took place today, but in sort of an ugly fashion, to use the way we tend to describe these games that aren't a thing of beauty. We've got Chris out in Evanston with some questions, some thoughts, some concerns about the Bears. Let's get Chris up here. What's happening, Chris?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I wanted to touch on, first of all, like you talked about, that fourth down call. I just see a coach that's like a deer in headlights. I mean, it's a 6-0 game, 4 minutes to go in the first half, and it's just one of the worst calls I've ever seen in coaching history in any of sports. To me, I was losing my mind before he hiked the ball. I couldn't believe we were going for that. That was a disaster waiting to happen. I don't care that it worked and we got a first down. You don't make that call. It's a 6-0 ball game. It's a 6-0 ball game. You get the ball in 4 minutes to start the half. And I just feel like this is consistently what he does every week. He finds a new way to just baffle my mind. And, I mean, that's just my thoughts on it.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Chris. And that's something that we might as well get into right now, since Chris had his call, his comment about it. And I was talking with your former teammate Jim Miller during our post-game show over on 32, just where, you know, fourth and one, your own 29, we can use terms like risky, gutsy, even desperation, but then with the way the offense has been so ineffective in the first half of games, I don't even know that desperation is necessarily a bad thing. And in the moment when they started to go for it, Jim and I both looked at each other like, whoa, what are they about to do? Then it works, and it leads to a touchdown, and it seemed like a moment where Matt Nagy's going off some gut, off some instinct, you know, whatever it may be. What was your reaction when you saw, man, they're going to go for this fourth down on their own 29?
You know, nobody who studies football is going to like that move on the 29-yard line. Only down 6 points. You're about to get the kickoff. But where the Bears are in their season, it just looked like Coach Nagy said, now or never.
Mm-hmm.
Now or never. Let's go get it. I trust the guys. You know, sometimes you can look at it two ways, where he's just saying, I trust my offensive line. I think he trusts Montgomery. Montgomery is a tough running back. I wish they'd give him the ball more. I think he sets a tempo out there. Really on that play, Snacks Harrison puts Cody White here in the backfield, and Montgomery has to run through him for the first down. So David Montgomery makes a big play there for the Chicago Bears. Coach Nagy might want to buy him a box of donuts from Dunkin' Donuts because those kind of calls, if you don't get it, you'll hear about it for a long time in Chicago. But Coach Nagy has always said he goes with his gut. This year it hasn't worked a lot for him. It did work for him there, but totally understand the caller saying, screaming like that, because I think we all – I just sat back in my chair, honestly, and said, well, if we're going to do it, let's do it.
Here we go.
If we're going to do it, let's do it.
And do you think – is that the type of moment, because you convert that fourth down, it immediately leads to – I think it was their only double-digit play drive of the first half. It immediately leads to a touchdown. You get the nice pass and great catch from Trubisky to Broniker to put a touchdown on the board before you go into the locker room. You take the lead into the locker room for one of the only times this season. And then you come out and you get the ball first. So you get that thing that Bill Belichick has always specialized in, where we have the ball at the end of the first half, we put points on the board, we got it again in the second half, coming out of the locker room, put points on the board there. Now you've got the opponent in this vice, because now they're down multiple scores where you've gone. You've surrounded both ends of halftime with points on the board for your squad. So that part worked out really well for the Bears. Do you see that moment, that fourth down call, well, you know Matt Nagy goes in after they convert it, and then when they put points on the board, you would imagine at halftime he addresses it with the team in the same way you just said, right? I got faith in you guys up front. I knew we were going to make that play, and since we made it, it sparked something. Is that something that potentially can carry over for the squad in knowing that Nagy had that faith in them in that moment?
It looked like it did, right? And it also looked like it put doubt in the Lions defense, who for some reason, as a 31st ranked unit in the league, Big Ant, was playing with a lot of confidence
really were,
versus the Bears offense.
They were.
And they looked like they expected to shut down this Bears offense today, which is scary to me from what they've seen on film. But Coach Nagy on the sideline had a feeling for his team and thought they needed that fourth and one. So he went for it there. He ends up getting it. And besides Kwiatkowski's interception, probably the biggest play in the game, right? Probably the two biggest, because if you punt it there, you don't have enough points to win the game. You just don't. So with Kwiatkowski's interception and that fourth and one, the Bears clawed their way out of that game with a very underhanded. The Detroit Lions didn't have a lot of guys today, right? And the thing that bugs me, Big Ant, and here's my question for you. Does that team, for the Chicago Bears we watched today, does that team beat the Rams?
And the Rams are a squad right now. They're looking at themselves probably in a similar way that the Bears have been looking at themselves, because the Rams, while they've had some nice moments this season, but they're not the squad that went on the Super Bowl run last year. They haven't performed at that level. They got one of the best running backs in the league in Todd Gurley, who's been banged up throughout this season. Not sure what's going on with his knees and his usage and the load management they've got going on there. So yeah, that's definitely something that we will address. It will take our first time out here of the Bears Post Show on 670. The Score will take you all the way up to the 6:30 point, where we're going to switch it over to Sunday Night Football coverage, where the Minnesota Vikings are going to be at the Dallas Cowboys. That coverage will begin right here on 670 The Score. And of course, tomorrow, a Built for Tough Bears Monday. Phone lines open here, 312-644-6767. That's 312-644-6767. Text line at 670.com. I'm Anthony Hare, and here's Bears legend Olin Krutz. This is 670 The Score.
It shows that Coach Nagy had a lot of confidence in our offense, that we were going to get that, and then we did. And that kind of jumpstarts the offense and kind of builds confidence within the guys, and it takes pressure off our defense because we're staying on the field, and that's what we want to do, continue to find ways to stay on the field. We got to convert more third downs, but the fourth down is huge, especially back in our territory, and we're able to stay on the field and keep it going. So we just need to keep doing more of that.
Welcome to the Bears Post-Game Show on 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station. Here's your hosts, Anthony Heron and Olin Krutz.
That's who we are. And you also heard the voice of Bears quarterback Mitchell Trubisky coming off their 20-13 win at home at Soldier Field over the Detroit Lions. He is Bears legend Olin Krutz. I'm Anthony Heron. He is on Twitter at Olin_Krutz. I am on Twitter at Big Ant Heron. Phone lines open here at 670 The Score, 312-644-6767. Text line at 670.com. We promised we were going to hear from some more of you here during the show. So you got Olin Krutz and Anthony Heron. Robert out in Aurora has a question for us coming off the Bears' victory over the Lions. What's happening with you, Robert?
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're good. How are you?
Hey, Olin Krutz, man. You my favorite center, man. You tough as hell, dude. Sorry, I hope I can say hell.
I got a appreciate question, it, Robert, man.
Olin Krutz, man. I can't find your jersey. I gotta like, order from China.
You're the one guy who wants it, Robert.
What's up, hey, Robert? What you got?
Hey, I have a question, man. Back in the day, the punters used to aim for the pylons. How come they don't do that no more?
The punters used to aim for the pylons. I mean, I think angle punting and coffee corner sort of kicks, that's still a thing in the National Football League. The biggest change, I would say, in punting today versus years ago, where as a return man, and we've seen Tariq Cohen struggle with this at times, trying to judge when it makes sense to field a ball or not field a ball. But the rule used to be you put your heels on the 10-yard line and then don't go backwards at all. Now in modern football, punters have gotten more and more effective. Some of the influence from like Australian rules football, where you get the end-over-end punting, where it really more you kind of take your landmark more back to the 5-yard line, where you're not looking to field a punt anywhere inside of that, but pretty much beyond that, you're hoping it's going to bounce into the end zone, then you get a field position advantage. But I don't know that I'd say punters don't necessarily aim for, you know, more of the angled punts anymore. You do see a little more of the movement and some of the Aussie rules type stuff now than you used to, though.
Yeah, and you said it, and Pat Manley would be the guy for this question. He would be the guy who would know. But they've gone to this rugby punt that it's like the dead punt, right, where it hits and just dies where it is. So that's really – it's just a technique change where guys aren't – like a Brad Maynard was a amazing directional punter, and Brad could aim it out of bounds at the 2 or 3 yard line. Now they want it to land and kind of bounce back, right, with that – they put that kind of spin on the ball, the rugby kind of spin, Robert. But definitely we'll ask Pat Manley that question when we see him.
I mean, if they aim for the pylon lines, there's no chance for a return. I mean, that was what we did back in the day. It'd be out at the 1 or the 2. If you're a good punter, you can get it right by the pylon line. It was an art back then. Now they're going right down the center. It gives the
Definitely, definitely. I just think, like we said, Robert, it's like a technique now. They just changed. They're not so much directional. They're dead punting it now with the spin they put on the ball.
Right, and of course, being able to aim it and hit the pylon. Yeah, it's one thing if you hit it. It's another thing if you don't, it goes into the end zone. We got Dan out in Lockport with Anthony Heron and Olin Krutz on the Bears Post Show here on 670 The Score. Dan, what's up with you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. Got a question. In the second quarter, Matt Prater kicked that 50-something yard field goal, but the Bears had the chance to take a penalty, which would have pushed them out of field goal range. Why do you think Nagy declined the penalty? Does he have losing confidence in his defense, or rather get away with 3 points and move on?
I know that question came up after the game as well, Dan, and I felt like it was a give or take kind of thing, because it is a 54-yard field goal. You push it to fourth down by declining the penalty. You give your offense a chance to maybe get back on the field, which they did, and then they end up scoring before the end of the half. Now, if you take that penalty and make it, I think it would have been a 3rd and 17 as opposed to a 4th and 12, then there is the opportunity for them, you know, who knows, maybe they complete a pass if it's not a first down, but maybe it's a closer field goal. And Coach Nagy went into that a little bit after the game. So I think it's one of those, you know, hit or miss type of things. I didn't necessarily see that as a huge gaffe by Nagy, even though the guy did drill a 54-yard field goal at Soldier Field, but that's certainly no gimme kick.
Yeah, and Prater is one of the best in the league, right? And I was kind of wondering the same thing that the caller's asking. Why not move him back? Driscoll is not, you know, what's the chance of getting a 3rd and 17? Now, that wasn't when they try to pull him off sides on fourth down, right?
No, different drive.
That was a different drive. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a third down penalty that they declined.
And it pushed him to fourth down, yeah.
Sometimes it goes back to what we talk about, Big Ant, is like, is the play calling sometimes in the way of being in total control of the game, right? Of being the head coach and making those kind of decisions, and somebody in your ear, because you got to figure that if you're the play caller, Coach Nagy, that moment is getting ready for the next drive, right? So who's handling the fact that where can Prater hit it from? Because, man, it looked like they could have backed him up 10 or 15 more yards when he hit that kick.
That would have been good for 60-plus.
But a good call, a good question, and something I was kind of wondering about in the game too. Like, why wouldn't you take that penalty there? Especially because that's not Matt Stafford, right? That's not Matt Stafford. 3rd and 17 is going to be hard to get there.
Yeah, and I even looked at it more from the standpoint of not being worried about whether or not they convert a 3rd and 17 first down. But, you know, maybe Driscoll runs for 10 yards and then it's 4th and a shorter field goal as opposed to, you know, so maybe you have a 48-yarder as opposed to a 54-yarder he's trying to kick at that point. And, you know, it's all the calculus of it, the gut feel of it. You know, it could end up going in a bunch of different directions there. But, yeah, good question, good call from Dan. One thing I was curious about from your perspective, Olin, where one of the things that this Bears offense has struggled with, even more recently, we were talking about some of the drops here and especially some of the ones that seem to take place early in game. And it felt to me like the Bears offense, I don't even know if flat is the right word, but a lack of focus, a lack of execution early in games, and where the early portion, the first half of last season, that scripted first 15 seemed to be where they were at their best. Guys were executing at a really high level. Then maybe things stalled out throughout the rest of the game. Second half of the season, that, you know, didn't continue to be the case. And now throughout the course of this season, they've really struggled to mount offense early in games, specifically with drops, though. For you, you're an offensive guy, you're a legendary center. A drop pass, whether it's been Tariq Cohen, Taylor Gabriel, there's even a moment where even Trey Burton, you know, he didn't have a drop, but there was a pass where it seemed like the ball was right there near his chest. For whatever reason, he decided he was going to jump into the air. He cradles it in, but his feet land out of bounds, as opposed to if he continues with his feet on the ground, running back downhill towards the ball and extends his hands out, he's got more of an opportunity to keep his feet in bounds as opposed to leaping out of bounds in that moment. So it seemed like from an execution standpoint, specifically with drops, is there something specific you would say about a drop that does throw off the rhythm, the timing of an offense that's kind of different than other miscommunications or bad plays, especially early in a game?
Yeah, it's a great question, because as an offensive lineman, you're blocking your guy. You can kind of tell when the ball's out, and you're like, yo, that I can't say on the radio what you say, because you're running down that field.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, like, and especially Big Ant, how much they've been struggling, right?
Yeah,
and they need – so what you're saying then is the moving Cody Whitehair to center didn't fix the drops then. Okay.
It did not.
I'm just wondering.
They still need the league right. In drops, for as I know.
All right, I got to stop taking this personal. So, I feel like they moved me, the left guard.
Right.
And I'm mad about that right now. But look, this offense is flat out. They won today. I feel like what Hub said, right? It feels like you think we're talking about a loss. They won today's game. The reason we sound like this is, as former players, you're always moving on to the next, right? Mm-hmm. And can we beat that team that's coming up next week? I think it's a Sunday night game in Los Angeles. They're probably looking for a little revenge, what happened to them here last year. Everybody talking about how they shut down Aaron Donald. This offense is not playing really good right now. Mm-hmm. Less than 300 yards against a 31st-ranked defense in the NFL. So they got to take a clear-eyed view at this. And you were saying earlier, off-air, Coach Nagy's got a tightrope to walk this week, right?
Yeah, he really does, man, because it's a performance that didn't – we hear the term, the standard is the standard. We hear Matt Nagy saying it. We hear a number of Bears players who've been saying it throughout the season. Regardless of the opponent, the standard is the standard. So you defeat the Detroit Lions, who especially via injury have not been performing at a really high level in recent weeks and throughout the scope of the season. So you come out, you narrowly defeat them 20-13, but really on both sides of the ball. It was not a performance that was up to the standard that we expected coming into this season, the standard that they expect of themselves internally. And I think that is going to be a difficult balance for Matt Nagy to walk, or at least a key one. You know, maybe not difficult, but certainly an important balance for him to walk with the players this week, with the media, whatever, but with the players in that locker room, to make sure that when you put that film on, you're saying, hey, and like they did, you know, look, because the question was coming up even on social media, should they do club dub? Do they do club dub after the game? Matt Nagy's got on his call sheet, be you. So yeah, you won a game, first time in well over a month. They hadn't won a game since September. Do your club dub. I'm all for it. But then recognize when you get back to work, you're getting back to the grind of it, that this was still not a high-quality performance. They still didn't execute at a high level on either side of the ball. So that's going to be a really important balance for Matt Nagy this week. But something we've referenced a couple of times here about that move, and you got Olin Krutz and Anthony Heron here on the Bears Post Show on 670 The Score. Still got some callers on the line at 312-644-6767. Sunday Night Football is going to come up at 6:30. We're taking you all the way up to that, where the Minnesota Vikings are going to be at the Dallas Cowboys. So you'll continue to listen to that here on The Score. But tomorrow will be a Built For It Tough Bears Monday, where we'll get more of your thoughts and questions in throughout the day on the station. But since Olin Krutz is here with us, and we've been this is a subject that he obviously, it hits close to home. He takes it a bit personally. We got some audio from Mitch Trubisky. He was at the podium after the game today. He was specifically asked about what even pregame and then certainly during the postgame was sort of a hot-button topic about the move from James Daniels at center to Cody Whitehair at center and Daniels moving to left guard. Let's hear what Mitch Trubisky had to say about that after the game.
Yeah, it was good. Cody does a great job having him back there. He's a really big leader for this offense and this offensive line. So he's really good with communicating, helping those young guys to the sides of him now. And we have really good chemistry, me and him. So he gives me confidence, and we just got to keep feeding off that. And when he's in the middle, just his communication, how he leads the guy, I think it really helps the offense and guys feed off that.
So that audio stuck out to me when Mitch was saying it at the podium afterwards. And I'm curious, when you hear that, Olin Krutz, as a former NFL center who did it at as high levels as you can do it, when you hear that from the Bears quarterback talking about, you know, there's nothing wrong with loving up Cody White here. You know, if that's your guy, you've been through these battles in the NFL a lot with your hands, you know, just like you and Jim Miller used to do. You know, you got to get personal as a quarterback and a center in a lot of situations. You operate a lot of close spaces together. But what comes to mind for you when you hear the way that Trubisky addressed that question?
It's just hard to answer that question, right? Because as a former center, former player like we are, it's just a wrong answer, Mitch. Mm. It really is. It's just, even if you feel that way, it's the wrong answer. Cody gives me confidence. Even though you don't mean it that way, it means James didn't. Man. Cody is a leader up there. Even if you don't mean it that way, it means James is not, right? It gets everybody organized. It's just not – it doesn't feel right to me to answer the question that way. If you're a team leader like Mitch is, and Mitch takes pride in being a team leader, I know he does. That's important to him. They were saying on a TV copy today that he was up and down the sideline trying to keep guys up. And if you really are who you say you are in your press conferences, if you are a leader, if you're always thinking about the team, if it's always we, then you don't say that. Even though you're not saying his name, you got to have a feel for the big end. That's who you're talking about when you say that stuff. So I'm not happy about the move. Look, if Mitch felt that way and said that to Coach Nagy and said, look, I think I'll be more comfortable playing quarterback with Cody there. We have great – when you say those things, what does it mean about the other guy then? Me and Cody have great chemistry. That means me and James don't.
Uh-huh.
Cody does a great job. He's a leader of the offense, does a great job. Just you have to have a better feel for it than that. If you are – What you stand in front of the podium and make like you are, if you are a team leader, you have to have a better feel for that moment and that question and what you're actually saying.
And I think it could have been a very simple thing that would have softened the way that likely came off. And, you know, who knows how it came off to James Daniels or anyone else on the offense, but certainly the way I interpreted it, and Olin, you did as well, it was that he could have taken the opportunity not only to compliment Cody White here and what he added to things, but also, you know, just throw a little something in there about James Daniels too. Like, James was doing a great job. You know, Cody's more experienced in there. We're trying to grow together as an offense. It's a move we tried. But, you know, something that essentially compliments both players, as opposed to he seemed to take the approach of focusing more on, or, you know, solely on what Cody Whitehair adds when he's at the center position. I would imagine, because Mitch does try to be careful when he's addressing the media, I would imagine that if he had an opportunity to address that question again, he would have addressed it differently than he did there. Because to your point, it did come off like, you know, hey, I'm just focused on, here's what Cody adds. And it without addressing that James does a nice job in this or that as well, then it comes off like, okay, then apparently maybe you didn't really like some of the things James Daniels was doing.
And all you really got to say is we all needed to get better on offense, and right. and a coach's thought they needed a change. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. That question, and you have to be in your third year as a quarterback, as a leader of the team, you have to be ready for that question.
Mm-hmm.
And look, people are going to say, well, he shouldn't be so sensitive. That's just the way it is. I'm telling you, from 14 years in the NFL locker room, that for a guy who's played and battled with you, it's like if someone said, hey, James, how'd you feel about when Chase played in those two? Well, I felt like he had amazing leadership. I felt like he recognized blitzes, right? I felt like he saw the open wide receiver. I'm way more comfortable with Chase than I am with Mitch. If James went all in like that, uh-huh. I'm sure people would have not been happy with James.
Right. That is a very fair parallel that you make there if the roles were reversed and James Daniels was the one answering that question. And like I referenced, you know, I think it's my impression is that it was some inexperience. I mean, not even inexperience, just a badly worded answer to a question that I think will probably come off in a way that Mitch would maybe like to have back and phrase a little different, because we know he's not a guy that's going to look to throw somebody under the bus. But that is how his answer to that question ended up coming off. He could have handled that one better. And there was something that came up earlier in the week that I haven't gotten an opportunity to hear. I'm sure you've been asked about it during the week, because part of this, from my perspective, is, you know, Mitch, you know, kind of maybe trying to come out of his shell a little bit, trying to take some ownership of how things are going with the team and how he's addressed publicly. There's some things about, you know, where, you know, Coach Nagy's talking about his body language and some of those things and having him watch TV copies of games. And there's some of these things that are addressed publicly about a young quarterback for the Bears that I think could be kept internally a little more to allow it to not seem like Mitch is just kind of this young pup who everybody has to nurture all the time. So I think his perception from the outside could be aided a bit better by the Bears. And my impression over the past week with the way Mitch has addressed some things with the media is that maybe Mitch is getting a little bit tired of seeming like he doesn't have personal ownership, or that he doesn't have confidence, or that he can't be seen as a leader on that team. I was curious, just with the whole like turning the TVs off thing, to me it was a comment he sort of made in passing. And frankly, you know, if he wanted the TVs turned off and he thinks he's enough of a leader in the locker room to say, yeah, maybe he doesn't even think it's affecting him. Maybe he's worried about how it's affecting whoever. Name another guy on the Bears roster who hadn't been playing well. I didn't necessarily see it as that big a deal, but I know around the city it got a big reaction. I was curious, what did you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, to be honest, it's just like I don't really listen to what they're saying. You turn the film on, and what are you doing when the film is on, right? And Mitch is not playing good football right now. So that's why everything he says is not right, right? It doesn't matter what he says. And Coach Nagy, because he had a reputation, and when you're winning, it's easy to do, of being honest. I'm always going to be honest with the media. I'm always going to tell you what's going on with the team. Well, all of a sudden now, the honest coaching staff, they can't tell you that Cody Whitehair starting at center all week, right? I guess that's some kind of competitive advantage for them. So these are things that, look, if you play better, that's really what you say just doesn't seem to matter anymore. The problem is when you turn to, like, you watch the game today and they're bringing one more than a line can pick up, Mitch doesn't see that. Or on the first third down when Taylor Gabriel's wide open, there's not a ball for him to catch and run there. So that's where Mitch has got to get better at. And then what you're saying doesn't sound so crazy, because when there's things that there aren't answers for, then there's no good answer, right? I mean, they just need to play better football to get rid of all these questions they're having, right? And a thing that I'm wondering about is, I'm looking over Big Ant at that defensive side of the ball and wondering what you see over there with the backup quarterback. And look, we changed the center because of communication problems. Mm-hmm. It looks like they're struggling with communication over there too on defense, even though they don't give up a lot of points today. They're moving the ball on them. Again, they score late, and they're right there to score to tie the game at the end of the game. And I'm wondering, what are you seeing in this defense now? Are they as dominant as a unit as we saw early in the year? And I know they're without Keem Hicks, but what has changed in this defense that backup quarterbacks now can even move the ball on them?
To me, where early in the season, for the first month plus of the year, I really thought Chuck Pagano was doing a nice job of in-game adjustments and figuring out how a Bears defense that was still stymieing opponents early anyway, but then how do we completely shut the door on them through that first month? And he makes some slight adjustments of here's the time where maybe I dial up a little more additional pressure. Here's the time where perhaps I dial it back, but I mix some coverages in. Or here's a moment where perhaps Deion Bush makes sense from a matchup standpoint in certain areas of the field. I feel like that's taking a step back here as of late with the Bears defense. Then you add in just the personnel who's not on the field for them anymore. Keem Hicks, now Danny Trevathan. Now so many opponents can focus on, let's just keep, you know, Khalil Mack away from the quarterback, and we're going to have a day that we can feel more comfortable in the backfield. But as always, Owen, this has been a comfortable time we've spent on this show. I mean, really, man, an hour just flew by.
Indeed.
Some of the callers on the line, appreciate who called in today. Appreciate the efforts of everyone in setting this show up and keeping us rolling here. been fun, Bears legend.
Been good, man. And just want to say, Kwiatkowski, hell of a job stepping in. And when you mentioned that Trevathan injury, he steps right in and plays at a high level again, like he did earlier in the
contract year. Might be earning some money right now, Nick Kwiatkowski.
Sure.
Ben Broniker, I think he earned
another game. Montgomery.
Get
these guys the ball. Montgomery the ball.
No doubt. That is Olin Kreutz. I'm Anthony Herron. This was the Bears post show here on 670 The Score. Coming up, got Sunday Night Football for you. Coverage begins right here on 670 The Score. The Minnesota Vikings are at the Dallas Cowboys. Short timeout. We'll take you to the national versions of things, getting you ready for the national game of the week on Sunday night.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.